It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And yes, indeed, we are off and running on this 20th day of January, 2022. It is quite frigid here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Hi, I'm Robin. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And, of course, as ever, if you would like to be to augment your listening experience, well, run on over to headon.live, and we're waiting for you in the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. And if you pop in right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Otto, and Roger, and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave. And we will see how this Thorn in the Side Thursday progresses. Let's see here. Every program at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. What that means is that we, this evening, send out gratitude to our 20th day of the month subscribers. That means thank you to Vincent, and thank you to Ralphs, thank you to Armand, thank you to our pal Reverbo, thank you to Dr. John in New Mexico, and, thanks to all of you for keeping independent, progressive, liberal broadcasting on the air over all these many years. Fundraising goal stands at $760 to try to catch up to this point in the week. And if we can just knock some of that down at least this evening, well, by Jove, we will have successfully kept ourselves from having a four-digit fundraising hole for Friday on the front porch. We'd have to take down about $361 if we could raise that this evening. And I've got some nice news from our pal Zed, Tim, in Oregon. I'd like to offer a $50 new subscriber challenge until the end of January. New $10 or more subscribers on PayPal or Patreon. I'll probably try to do this monthly now, maybe. So there's if there are five people out there who would like to become new subscribers via Patreon or PayPal, our buddy Zed will turn your first month's subscription from $10 into $20, up to $50. So five people, $10. Even I can cipher that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Tim. It is much appreciated. And Tim's one of the folks I'm looking forward to seeing at the Horn Inn in early June. I'm so excited. It's going to be warm, among other things. It'll be so delightful to have a couple of days to hang out with members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. I really am excited about it. And if you'd like to participate in that, the post is still up over at GoFundBob.com. Sorry about the Bob part, but it was there before my transition became a reality. Maybe check it out and maybe think about coming and assuming that we have gotten past this godforsaken plague, or this part of it. Don't even go there. Right. But nonetheless, that is the goal for us to have. And, you know, there'll be a lot of good food. You know, in the week before that happens, I will be cooking like crazy. And we'll have a blast in the greater Fayetteville area, the newest national park. I think we're still the newest national park in the United States. And you can see why I'm so excited and so happy and so delighted with this hip, cool, wonderful little town. Well, it's the nearest little town to where I live. We'll see, you know. So I'm looking forward, you know, Chris in Germany, Tara, Ralph's, Tim, there are Roger in Oregon. We're gonna have a banging little get together. I'm looking forward to it. But today is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I would be remiss if I did not note that it is, in fact, awfully damn thorny. So with that in mind, we'll probably just get started. And, you know, yesterday, I hope people were not too terribly put off by the fact that we ran all of that audio yesterday. Like I said, I felt like we were a witness to history. And with that in mind, we ran with the debate yesterday with some commentary along the way. I went back and rewatched Senator Reverend Warnock's speech, and I am convinced that it is quite possibly, and I mean it was as good the second time as it was the first. Reverend Warnock's Senate debate speech was, I think, quite possibly the best piece of American oratory probably since Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. And it may go down in history as one of the best pieces of oratory ever, for its optimism, for its common decency, and simply for just how profoundly good it was. And with that in mind, let's see here. With that in mind, let's start with the dark side, shall we? And by that I mean Moscow Mitch McConnell, the Turtle Man. Moscow Mitch took a victory lap yesterday after all the debate was closed. There was more debate after we closed the program. That they went from Bill 1 to Bill 2. And after all was said and done, Moscow Mitch trundled up to the microphone, backed by at least John Barrasso, that's his name, and proceeded to take a few questions from the ink-stained wretches of the press, including this question. This is a real hockey puck job and duct tape, so, you know, you've been warned.
What's your message for voters of color who are concerned that without the John L. Lewis Voting Rights Act, they're not going to be able to vote in the midterm?
What's your message to voters of color who are concerned that without the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, they're not going to be able to vote? I realize the audio was a little sketchy there.
Well, the concern is misplaced, because if you look at the statistics, African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans.
You got that? Let's make sure nobody missed it.
Well, the concern is misplaced, because if you look at the statistics, African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans.
Say it again, Moscow Mitch, for the people in the back.
Well, the concern is misplaced, because if you look at the statistics, African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans.
One more time.
Look at the statistics. African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans.
African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans. Got it? African-American voters are different from Americans. I wonder what could possibly be the difference. Don't you? Well, maybe the brilliant author Toni Morrison had the answer. Because she said, in this country, American means white. Everybody else has to hyphenate. Indigenous Americans, African Americans, Asian Americans. The word American means white. And coming out of the festering gob of a man who once proudly, and more than once, very likely, proudly posed in front of the Confederate battle flag. Nina, look, this is the goddess of irony at work. She made him say that. She made him draw a distinction between African Americans and Americans. I mean, he could have said African American voters are voting in the same at the same rates as other Americans. But white people aren't other Americans. In the sick and twisted democracy and freedom in America hating mind of Mitch McConnell, white Americans can never be other Americans. They are the Americans. Using the definite article as opposed to the indefinite. You find that sickening? I find that utterly disgusting. And it tells me exactly, not that we were wondering, who Moscow Mitch is. Angelo with a note from the People's Republic of the Bronx. Well, as Malcolm X told us over 55 years ago, you don't catch hell because you're a Mason or an elk, and you sure don't catch hell because you're an American, because if you was an American, you wouldn't catch no hell. You catch hell because you're a black man. You catch hell, all of us catch hell for the same reason. Wouldn't it be nice if we'd made some damn progress since 55 years ago, Angelo? Wouldn't it just? Because it feels like maybe for a moment there, a brief shining moment, I think that's the line from the song, from the musical, Camelot, for one brief shining moment, there never was a spot for happy yet, no. But in this same week when we have observed the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. federal holiday, this statement by Moscow Mitch tells us everything we need to know about the progress we have not made. Because as is so much the case with, or as is the case with so much of American history, we tend to compress it. And what I mean by that is that Okay, so August of 1963, Dr. King gives the I Have a Dream speech, and then we get the Voting Rights Act in 1964, and then we get the Civil Rights Act of 1965, and then everything was great, and it was all over, and nobody had to worry about anything anymore. Only that ain't how history works. Not even. What we had was a brief period of time. You had the upheaval that followed Brown versus Board of Education, and then the further upheaval that followed Bloody Sunday in Selma, the March on Montgomery. Finally, after massive amounts of pressure, the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, eventually the Fair Housing Act, which Nitwit Nero and his Klansman daddy would violate and get busted and prosecuted for. And eventually, there would be this idea that somehow or another we'd gotten a little bit better. And then we would find out with things like the slaughter of Breonna Taylor, with the long voting lines that disproportionately affect black and brown majority polling places, with the murder of Eric Garner, Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, so many names, George Floyd, again, Breonna Taylor, that we'd find out that that progress was as illusory as the mirage seen from afar by a thirsty person in the desert. Progress, Angelo says. LOLOLOL. To quote James Baldwin, what is it you wanted me to reconcile myself to? I was born here almost 60 years ago. I'm not going to live another 60 years. You always told me it takes time. It's taken my father's time, my mother's time, my uncle's time, my brother's time, my sister's time. How much time do you want for your progress? And that's precisely the point. Progress was always a bit of a carnival sideshow dodge, don't you think? The minute I saw that and heard that quote from Moscow Mitch McConnell, arguably the most powerful man in the Senate, outside, of course, of Queen Jo Manchin, I knew it had to be the beginning, because it's been a while since I've run across a thorn more thornier than this thorn for Thorn in the Side Thursday. It's disgusting. It's infuriating. And, you know, I got a bone to pick with the people of Kentucky who have returned him to office time after time after time after time. Still not sure they returned him to office this last time. Talk about sketchy voting machine numbers. That was weird last November 2020. So it's a starting place. Yeah, one more time, just because it needs to bury itself in our consciousness.
Turn is misplaced, because if you look at the statistics, African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans.
My mind actually wants to hear other wants to insert the word other in front of Americans, but I'm not going to let it. It isn't there. In this country, American means white. Everybody else has to hyphenate. Thank you, Toni Morrison. Thank you. So like I said, that's our starting point. And this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, and, well, the day that it is, and we use it for, let's check this out. Let's go to Texas and stay with the theme, shall we? A guy named Don Huffines, maybe Huffins, no clue, H-U-F-F-I-N-E-S, Huffinese, Huffinus, Huffinace, anyway, who he is a guy who's running a primary challenge. He's one of the primary challengers of Governor Greg Asbot. He is, of course, a maggot and a Republican. And it turns out he's got a campaign staffer who's kind of special. That staffer's name is Jake Lloyd Colglazier. Now, what Colglazier particularly and specifically does for candidate Huffines is not entirely clear. But what we do know is that Jake Lloyd Colglazier is a white nationalist. I really object to that term. He's a white supremacist. Because if you're running around saying that, you know, white people need their own nation, well, you're a white supremacist. But Political Research Associates published a report about Jake Lloyd Colglazier. And his journey to becoming one of the prominent voices in the America First, or what's called Groiper movement. There's a new word. And of course, he came to that from where else? InfoWars. You know, over there where Alex Jones hustles chocolate paleo chicken bone beverage. And vitamins that, never mind. He's a youngin', deputy communications director. According to the True Texas Project, that's another right-wing cesspool that's aligned itself with Huffines' campaign. Later, they took that down. He's young and he's a climber. 24. And, well, here's the thing. Once it was discovered that he is, in fact, a white nationalist who has said, among other things, that where's the line? I had it there a minute ago. The white race is dying. He spoke at an America First conference that was organized by a guy named Nick Fuentes, who is a fairly well-known Holocaust denier. Well, when Don Huffines was asked about the presence of young Colglazier on his campaign, Huffines said, well, he has done field work for my campaign. I have 12 field offices across Texas and over 70 people on payroll with my campaign. If I were to go through the social media history of any young Texan, I would find something I disagree with. My campaign will not participate in cancel culture. not having a white supremacist, not having an anti-Semite on your campaign amounts to cancel culture? And that line about any young Texan. I'm pretty sure that there are liberal, progressive, decent young Texans out there with whom Don Huffines disagrees lock, stock, and barrel, part and parcel, in toto. But what he's saying there is that, the kind of people that might work and vote for me, it might be a little bit anti-Semitic, or a lot. And they might just be white nationalists. But it'd be cancel culture to get shit of them. So, I guess young Cole Glazier will stay there. Bear in mind, young Mr. Cole Glazier has said, we need to get into positions of authority or within close proximity to positions of authority in the Republican Party. We need to get into positions of institutional power so that we can enact policies that can prevent or stymie demographic change, so that we can continue to gain institutional power, so that we can restore historical America. There's that America with no adjectives in front of it. Well, okay, historical. And by historical, he means white. We're not going to participate in cancel culture. No, we're not. Angelo pointing out, as the late Dr. Amos Wilson explained, the reason why they do what they do is because they have the power to do so, and we lack the power to stop them from doing so. They do it because they can. Racism is a function of power. So long as they have the means to do so, they will. It is that simple. And really, those January 2020 remarks from Mr. Cole Glazier suggest that, well, the racism, the anti-Semitism, the anti-everythingism, I mean, I'm pretty sure that he's not a friend of the LGBTQ plus community until he gets caught with a man in his mouth. The fact of the matter is, he's talking about the very thing that's going on in Texas right now, and Georgia, and all over most of the Confederacy, if not all of it. White nationalists, white supremacists, weaseling their way into positions of power so that they can make these right-wing institutions, the grand old party, look and sound and march and goose step more like them. It's going to be an interesting year getting to the 2022 midterms. Thanks, Flavio. You weren't alone in noticing Addison, Mitch McConnell's slip, Black Americans versus Americans. Joy Reid didn't miss it. She mentioned it on her show last night with all the scorn it deserves. Well, I would, if it was a slip, it was a Freudian one. But I don't think it was a slip. I think he knows damn good and well what he's doing when he says things like that. Because he has a base to mollycoddle, Flavio. As to Addison, Mitch McConnell. Stephen New York says, most other people, I'd accept that a person who said that would have made an error in speaking, especially if they'd apologize. Well, if you did that with regard to Addison, Mitch McConnell, the worst attempt at a human being ever to come out of Colbert County, Alabama, you would be wrong. He's been at this too long. He does not make mistakes like that. Dog whistles are dog whistles because they're only supposed to be heard by the dogs who are being whistled at. He is who he is. And maybe this is the most important part of that. Every single Republican who voted with him is no different. They have gotten in bed, and when you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. We have cliches like that for a reason. And so, you know, Susan Collins, it's on you. Lisa Murkowski, it's on you. John Barrasso, Steve Daines, it's on you. Tom Cotton, it's on you. James Lankford, it's on you. You are being led. You are doing the bidding of a man who thinks that there is an African America, there's an African America and an America. And it is, in fact, sickening. And so, as we begin to develop what feels a bit like a theme for this evening, well, look, it's Lauren Bobblehead Boebert, liar, Lauren Bobblehead Boebert. Story hit the wires earlier today out of BuzzFeed News about a group of Jewish visitors to the United States Capitol. They were on their way to a meeting with Representative Tom Suozzi. They were all wearing yarmulkes. I guess maybe there weren't any women. The leader of the group is an Orthodox Jew, and he had the standard issue beard. And they were waiting for an elevator. And lo and behold, when the elevator stopped and the door opened, there stood Lauren Bobblehead Boebert, who stopped and looked at this group of Orthodox Jews, looked them up, looked them down, took them all in, and then said, "Are you here to do reconnaissance?" One of the rabbis with the group was interviewed by BuzzFeed. He said, "When I heard that, I actually turned to the person standing next to me and asked, 'Did you just hear that?'" "You know, I'm not," the rabbi continued, bless his heart, "you know, I'm not sure to be offended or not. I was very confused. People are very sensitive now." Are you here to do reconnaissance? Well, professional victim, liar Lauren Bobblehead Boebert said, "I saw a large group and made a joke. Sadly, when Democrats see the same, they demonize my family for a year straight. I'm too short to see anybody's yarmulkes." Now, of course, BuzzFeed News knows how to spell yarmulkes. I'm pretty sure if you spotted her all the consonants and one of the vowels, Lauren Bobblehead Boebert couldn't spell yarmulke on the best day of her life. Oh, no, I don't think so. Now, why were the rabbis there? Obviously, Lauren Bobblehead Boebert thought they were doing reconnaissance, which is a little bit curious, because in point of fact, at a time when the Capitol was closed during the pandemic, and, well, last year, it has been widely reported that, in fact, she did help maggots conduct reconnaissance in the days and weeks leading up to the attempted coup, the assault on constitutional governance in the United States, and the seat of that constitutional governance, and the public servants' oath sworn to uphold that constitution. But the reason they were there, these rabbis, The reason they were there was they were meeting with Representative Swazi because of the 41st anniversary of the end of the Iran hostage crisis. You remember that, I'm sure. Old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, that greasy-headed B-movie actor who got upstaged on more than one occasion by a chimp, he had set up a dodgy scheme with the Ayatollah's folks to make sure that American hostages being held in Tehran were kept there longer than necessary in order to make it more likely that he would defeat Jimmy Carter's re-election bid. God, think much further. How much further down the road we might have been if Jimmy Carter had gotten his second term. But he didn't, because old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, the greasy-headed B-movie actor, whose autobiography was called Where's the Rest of Me, who kicked off his campaign with a states' rights dog whistle speech of his own in August of 1980 in Neshoba County, Mississippi. I'm going to say that every time I talk about him, simply because I want it to be understood forever and ever, all the way down to the ground. He swapped arms, weapons, for the release of those hostages, but only after he had taken office. So this group of rabbis was commemorating the 41st anniversary, and Representative Tom Suozzi has been trying to see that the hostages from those horrifying days were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal. Asked about the incident, Representative Suozzi said, "The bottom line is that everyone, especially members of Congress, have to be very, very thoughtful in the language they use. Because when you're a member of Congress, you have an important role to play in society. You can't be cavalier in the comments you make, especially if they could be perceived as being anti-Semitic or discriminatory." Exactly. Flavio says Bobo was casing the joint last year. Yep. But of course, always remember when we stumble onto a story like this, always remember IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Republican. Jesus. And a reminder, here in the next 20 minutes or so, I'm hoping that an individual I spoke with yesterday, a mom, a parent by the name of Angela Simmons of Virginia, will be joining us, because she has a child in the school system, public school system, in the Old Dominion. And she wants to talk a little bit about what that feels like now that Glenn Youngkin has ascended to the governorship of Virginia. And he's gotten busy. Jen Psaki, the press secretary for President Biden, and a woman known for taking no crap, well, she decided to square up against Glenn Youngkin, Glenn Youngkin was swept into office on a wave of hate. It was masqueraded as, and this trope was promulgated, for instance, on My Filthy Morning Habit. Caught some of that this morning. Now, I did not catch the first hour. But the second 2 hours, you would never have known that Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock was even in the United States Senate. But there was plenty to talk about with the Queen of West Virginia, Joe Manchin. I refer to Joe as the Queen of West Virginia, not as some sort of gender snark. But because on a chessboard, the Queen has all the power. Just like Joe does here in West Virginia. And all over America. Yeah. But anyway, Glenn Youngkin was swept into office on an Orwellian tide of parental freedom and parental choice. What that really means is white grievance. White ahistorical parents who are upset that their children might, at some point in time, learn just how awful their ancestors behaved, say, 160 years ago. 161. And calling it critical race theory. And he had a lot of money, Glenn Youngkin did. And he got a lot of that money from hate groups. Hate groups like the Family Research Council, headed up by Tony Norman. Yes, Mother Bates Perkins. As Flavio says, Glenn Youngkin was elected on a bald-faced lie, CRT. So he was swept into office on a fraud perpetrated on the people of Virginia. I agree entirely. And so another component of Glenn Youngkin's payback to all of the, and that was another one of the frauds that was perpetrated by the for-profit media. Glenn Youngkin told Donald Trump not to come down there and campaign with him because he wanted to win, and he realized, you know, Virginia Republicans are sick of Donald Trump. Horseshit. Wait, is that my first cuss word of the evening? It's maybe a record, 43 minutes. The people who elected Glenn Youngkin are not sick of Donald Trump. Not by a long shot. But in addition to critical race theory, one of the other things was masks. And children having to wear masks to try to slow the spread of this insidious virus. God, I just got a note from our pal John up in PA. Well, Robin, it's been nice knowing you. I think I caught COVID because my psychotic employers let it burn up half the shop floor. We have regressed on labor in this country. Oh, Lord, yes. We've absolutely regressed. It has been nice knowing you. I hope to continue to know you. Don't talk like that, John. Take care of yourself. If you are vaccinated and boosted, you should be in good shape. If you start feeling ugly-ass symptoms, try to get yourself the... And I need to do... Would the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department please check in real quick? Because there are three monoclonal antivirals. Two out of three of them do not work well against Omicron. One of them does. Just for the sake of a public service, could someone in the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department take a look and see which one it is that works? I keep meaning to do that, and it keeps slipping my mind. But if you start feeling super crappy, John, see about trying to get that one monoclonal monobody. Get that one monoclonal antibody that does work. But anyway, Glenn Youngkin is a mask hole. He's a COVIDiot. He's a spread neck. And so, Glenn Youngkin has said that he's going to give some parents some freedom so their children won't have to wear American masks. Because he ordered every school system in Virginia to let parents opt out of compulsory mask wearing in the classroom. Well, I got a clip here from Glenn Youngkin. Might be helpful.
Mask order. Arlington County Public Schools essentially said it was going to ignore the order. Is there anything you're going to do to make that school system comply?
Well, first of all, we wrote the order specifically to give all of the school systems basically 8 days to get ready, to listen to parents. And the fact that that tweet came out from Arlington County within minutes of my executive order, well, what that tells me is they haven't listened to parents yet. And if there's one thing that hopefully everybody heard...
Yeah, they haven't listened to parents yet. They haven't listened to all the barking and the grunting and the hooting and the growling and the squealing and the burbling and the yawping of the parents who say, well, we want our children to get the Omicron. We don't give a damn about them.
Oh, this guy's a genuine knob.
...in November is it is time to listen to parents. So over the course of this week, I hope...
Okay, and so understand, again, the dog whistle theme arises for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Listen to parents is actually, it's kind of like Mitch McConnell there. Americans doesn't need a modifier in front of it, because you can just take the white as red. R-E-A-D. And in this case, listen to parents also includes a phantom word. MAGA parents. Because there are plenty of parents, as we shall shortly see, there are plenty of parents who damned well want their children to be protected against the coronavirus, despite the protestations of Glenn Youngkin, who's trying, and this is the next phase in maggot in the evolution of the maggot political system, and that is to come up with a Donald Trump who isn't as stupid or as obviously hateful as Donald Trump. What this says to me is Arlington schools hadn't listened to parents yet. That is a stochastic call for the barking, grunting, hooting, growling, larping, smollicking, grabulating maggot parents to descend upon the Arlington public school system and upon the school board. Maybe threaten their lives a little bit, because that's been a thing.
Hopefully everybody heard in November is it is time to listen to parents. So over the course of this week, I hope they will listen to parents, because we will use every resource within the governor's authority to explore what we can do and will do in order to make sure that parents' rights are protected.
Never mind the children's rights, like a right to be protected against a potentially deadly virus. No, it's the right of not particularly bright right wing parents to bark and grunt and hoot and I don't know sprinkle ground up ivermectin on their kids' sugar frosted chocolate super sugar bombs in the morning. Well, like I said, remember Jen Psaki? This was actually a story about Jen Psaki. She saw that clip. And said, "Hi there. Arlington County parent here. Don't believe you are Glenn Youngkin, but correct me if I'm wrong. Thank you to Arlington Public Schools, Virginia, for standing up for our kids, teachers, and administrators and their safety in the midst of a transmissible variant." God, she made all those words work in that tweet, didn't she? Because Glenn Youngkin is not a parent of an Arlington schools student. And of course, it would be, I would be remiss if I did not note that now with the new regime in control of the governor's office in Virginia, in that video, not one person within the frame of that video is wearing a mask. Even though the assembled stage props behind Glenn Youngkin are all standing practically shoulder to shoulder. Just a spewing and a viraling all over each other. Well, I think we can score round one for Jen Psaki. And one wonders what Glenn Youngkin will order the government to try to do to the Arlington Public Schools. But for the time being, the Arlington Public Schools are getting it right, and they say that they will continue to require kids to wear masks. And he has, Youngkin, by the way, has issued a scads of executive orders trying to pay back the hate groups that funded his rise to the governor's office. Oh, and following up, our buddy John in Pennsylvania says, "I was actually scheduled to get my booster today, but I obviously had to cancel because I'm not feeling well. I'm going to get tested now. I was being facetious about the nice knowing you stuff, LOL. I know I shouldn't even joke. Thanks for the kind words, though. I'll be fine." Well, one of the most wonderful things about this community, some nearly two decades long, is that the care is real. We care about each other. Thank you, Roger in Oregon, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department, says, "Officials said sotrovimab is the only monoclonal antibody treatment for COVID that has so far been shown to hold up against Omicron." Sotrovimab, John, and everybody else for that matter. Ralps also noted sotrovimab. Thank you both so kindly. Who knows? There may be somebody out there in the community who needs that information. Addressing himself to John, Steve in New York says, "I have to concur with you, Robin. John, please don't speak that into the universe. I love your Pennsylvania on-the-ground insights." Flavio also found sotrovimab. Thank you, Flavio. Now, back to Lauren Bobblehead Boobert. Steve says, "I'm trying to think of any circumstances for which that comment is appropriate." Don't waste too many brain cells on it, Steve, because there aren't any. Adding Arlington schools, the schools actually have. Stephanie Miller has a guy who's an Arlington school board member. The parents want mask mandates. Yeah, but those are the wrong parents to listen to. Again, listen to parents means to listen to barking, grunting MAGA parents who might very well be feeding their children aquarium cleaner even as we speak. Right. Flavio pointing out, Youngkin, don't forget Fauci. Youngkin won not only against CRT, but also against the tyranny of Fauci, masks, and vaccines. Yeah, he was a one-stop shop for maggot white grievance politics. And you can expect to see that more and more as the year progresses. And again, here in a couple of minutes, we will be talking with Angela Simmons of Virginia about another aspect of Glenn Youngkin's attempt to pay back his political patronage. And here we go again. Here's another one. Representative Massey of Kentucky has tested positive for COVID and has declared that he's unvaccinated. Thomas Massey. You may recall Thomas Massey because Thomas Massey was the one who told Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez that she better not come down to Kentucky because he'll have something to say about it. Well, she burnt him to the ground and said, I am a free American and I will go where I wish, as I wish. At which point, Thomas Massey, having had his posterior handed to him, said, yes, ma'am. I have tested positive for SARS-CoV-2. Home test confirmed by a lab PCR. I had cold allergy symptoms for one day and seemed to be over. I will not be voting, meeting in person, or making public appearances until next week. I am not vaccinated or boosted. He claimed he has a mild case because he's already had it once before. It's that game of Russian roulette with, you know, where you just keep putting bullets in the cylinder until the... Yeah. So assuming a six-shooter, Representative Massey is now playing Russian roulette with two bullets in the chamber and leaving him four opportunities not to... Well, you know. But as promised, let's bring on Angela Simmons. I've been looking forward to this conversation since yesterday. Are you there, Angela?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hello. It is such a pleasure to speak with you.
It is lovely to speak to you as well. How are you today?
Cold, but surviving. It's just that time of year, I'm afraid. We got more snow. We got more snow coming. And I think Saturday night the low is supposed to be like 3. It's hard to imagine spring even coming in the midst of all of this. But it is. We'll get to spring sooner or later. But I wanted to talk to you very badly when I found your petition yesterday. Because I think you're raising an issue. I was just now talking about Glenn Youngkin going after masks and children wearing masks in school, after critical race theory. But there is an element of Glenn Youngkin's attack on the school systems that really, really hits home for you. And I would appreciate it if you would talk about it a little bit, please.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on your show and to talk about this. It really means so much to me. My petition is, I really wanted to highlight the positive impact the current law has had on my daughter. With every child, of course, should feel accepted and respected at school. And that goes for any child. But trans children have it a little bit more difficult, or they did until about 6 months ago when the law really came into effect. Marion came out about a year ago, and then 6 months ago, she let me know she was transgender. She was super patient with me while I adjusted, had to correct myself often with her name, But now, 6 months later, it feels odd to even think her first name. So it's really simple to just adjust. It's such a small thing. And she had a really difficult time with her father. So she moved in with me permanently. In the beginning, she was really shy, withdrawn, hardly ever smiled. We met with the principal who helped us iron out where Marion can change for Jim. They provided a gender-neutral bathroom. They noted her pronouns and that she wanted to go by her middle name. And, you know, she emailed all the teachers so they were aware and everyone was on the same page. It was incredibly supportive and inclusive. I can't say enough good things about them. Marion was finally free to be herself everywhere. And she has absolutely blossomed. She started slowly smiling all the time. Even when I would ask her to do a chore, like take out the dog, she would be smiling, walking out the door. And just seeing that made me feel like I had won the most prestigious award in the universe.
Oh, Angela, I wish you could see how I wish you could see how I'm smiling right now. This story repeats itself time after time, as I'm sure you're well aware, with trans kids who are allowed to be themselves, to live their authentic best lives. If I may ask, how old is she? How old is Marion?
She's 16.
Oh my.
Yep, she's got 2 years left of school, which is what prompted me to start the petition, because it fills me with a deep dread that it might revert back the way it was before.
And if we could sort of examine that for a moment, Angela, what is the way it was before?
Well, of course, they had to go to the bathroom according to their gender, which of course they're not comfortable with.
Their birth certificate.
They had to get changed. Yes, yes. And then, of course, dressing out for Jim was a problem. The teachers would refuse to call them by the names that they would prefer. You know, just all around negative, unsupportive, not inclusive at all. Just, you know, it doesn't cost anything except a little kindness. You know, and I can't help but wonder how many quiet, withdrawn teens currently feel like Marion used to feel. And they're still scared. But there is something better for them if everyone would just respect and support them. And it's not even a big deal. It really isn't. It's such a small thing. And so that's why this law needs to stay in effect. And all across the United States, every state, I know you mentioned West Virginia, you know, had a lot of trans teens, and, you know, they need this everywhere, in every state.
Oh, absolutely. And is she afraid of being not forced back into the closet, but once the closet door has been kicked down and one is free, going back in is not an alternative, it's not a possibility, but is she worried herself about this prospect, or is this just you being a mom and kind of looking down the road?
It's me being a mom looking down the road. I actually haven't asked her. I mean, she knows about the petition, but I have not asked her personally how she feels about if things do go back. I'm honestly, Robin, I'm scared to ask her that. I'm scared to even bring it up because I don't want her to worry.
No, you don't. And you've seen real time, and I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but I want to let you, a parent of a trans teen, have a chance to talk about how profound the difference is when a trans child gets to live their best life and gets to live authentically. What kind of child was she before she was able to come out? You know, you talked about she's got a smile on her face. Now, I know a little bit about that smile.
I didn't know what was wrong before. She made herself as small as possible. I can't think of a better way to describe it. She's very quiet, withdrawn, very shy. You know, her schoolwork suffered. She wasn't comfortable. And there was something wrong, but I didn't know what it was until she told me.
Did it manifest in behavioral things or like disinterest in studies? What sorts of stuff?
Yes, she was not interested in doing school. Just very distracted. Yeah.
And you said she's 16, and what was it, just inside your household? What was the coming out process like? What was that conversation like?
Well, we were actually at a drive-in movie theater when she mentioned that she wanted to, like. It was just very casual. It was so strange. We were at a drive-in movie theater, and I just asked her her pronoun. I was like, what pronouns do you prefer? And she said she, her. And I was like, well, are you transgender? I just, you know, I needed clarification. And all it is just open communication. And
She knew she could be
comfortable with me and that I wouldn't judge her. She's always known that ever since she was little. I mean, I know we were watching a TV show when I think she was seven and two males kissed and she said, ew. And I was like, people can't help who they love. There's nothing wrong with that. And so I've always made it abundantly clear that I was perfectly okay with that. Now, her father, on the other hand, is not the same, and she did have difficulties with him, you know, trying to tell her that she's not trans, that, you know, she just needs to go to therapy, that she's just confused.
It's just
you know,
a phase.
It's none of that. Yeah, yeah. It's you know, she got that from him. She got love and acceptance from me, and that's where she's staying right now with me.
Good. Good. I'm so glad she's in a safe place, and I'm so glad she's. I don't know if she knows how lucky she is to have you in her life, and to have you accepting and supporting. But she is. Now? Do you have any idea about how many trans kids there are in the schools in Virginia? Is it better in some places than in others?
It is. I know in her school, the principal mentioned there were a few other students that went by another name and that used the bathroom as well. So in her school, there are other trans teens. But from the second thing you said about other areas not adhering to the law, that is also true. We live in the city, and the county, right outside the city, those county schools do not go by the state law. The school board decided not to do it, and they will not. If I moved to the county right now and put her in a county school, she would not get the same treatment. And there are no consequences or fines to enforce it. I looked it up. The only possible way to force the school to adopt the policy is for the parents to sue. And I don't think it's right for the parents. It shouldn't be the parents' job to force schools to adhere to state law.
No, it should be something that the schools do themselves. I asked you that question, Angela, simply because, I have more than passing familiarity with the Commonwealth of Virginia. And it is very much It's not uniformly the same state. There are parts of Virginia that are a lot more like West Virginia. There are parts of Virginia that are a lot more like maybe North Carolina or Tennessee. And then there are the more metropolitan areas, which seem to be considerably more enlightened. I don't know if you heard before the program came on, but I was talking about Jen Psaki, who is taking on Glenn Youngkin now over masks in the Arlington public schools.
I love her.
Yeah, isn't she wonderful? She's going head to head with Glenn Youngkin because the Arlington public schools said, no, we're going to keep having the kids wear masks because we'd like for the kids not to get sick. Glenn Youngkin has a lot of political debts to pay, and it seems that he is bent on paying some of those debts on the backs of children like your daughter.
That is definitely not okay.
No, is there any kind of, among parents of trans kids there, is there any kind of organization taking place, any kind of coming together to create a united voice for trans children?
No, but I would love to do that. That is definitely something, I started this petition. I want to get the word out. I want as many people to sign it as possible. I want to make a change. I want to prevent a change from happening, actually. I want things to stay as they are because it is really beneficial for transgender children to have these, a little bit of support. It's all they need. It's so simple.
It should be that simple.
It is. Yeah, right now, it's glorious to see the change in her. She laughs and she smiles all day, larger than life, with excellent taste, I'm sure, by the way. she's amazing. And every child should have the love and support that Marion does.
How are things with her peer group there in the school?
She has not had any problems with bullying or anything. Everyone's been really accepting. She's got friends. She goes and visits them at their house. Like, she's, being social. It's amazing.
That's so beautiful. There are, and it's all over the country. It's certainly here in West Virginia. There are bills, and they're all written by the same, they're written by a group that funneled money, a hate group that funneled money into Glenn Youngkin's campaign, the Family Resource Council. And I don't know if you know this, Angela. I've mentioned this in talking about them in the past on this program. When Tony Perkins founded the Family Resource Council, and it's a great hustle, these hate organizations, his first email list, and it might prove handy to talk about going forward in the future, his first email list he purchased from David Duke, the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. So literally, the first sign-on members of the Family Research Council, the first people who started writing checks, were literally Klansmen or supporters of the Klan. That's who the Family Resource Council is. And they are the clearinghouse for all of this anti-trans legislation that is polluting state legislatures all over the country. I was born and raised in Alabama. I live in West Virginia now. And both states, almost immediately when the legislatures gaveled into session, had bills waiting to stop trans kids from being able to receive life-affirming medical care. I don't know if one of those has been introduced in the Virginia House yet or the Virginia Senate, but it's something you might want to look into. And I don't want to invade Marion's privacy or anything, but within the scope of her coming out and her transition, is she looking at that down the road, or because the bills like this are brutal on kids who, for instance, want to block block puberty.
Right. You mean like hormone therapy?
Well, with kids who are below the age of majority, it's really hard and most states won't let them have actual testosterone blockers or estrogens, but they can get what are called puberty blockers. And basically, these are medications that are used with cis children who begin what's called precocious puberty, like, say, an 8-year-old girl who gets her period, or, you know, an 8-year-old boy who has a 5 o'clock shadow at noon. They will pause. It's like pushing a button. It will pause the puberty process and stop it, and hold it in abeyance until the child can reach an age where they can make a decision for themselves about whether to go on something like estrogen or anti-androgens, things like that.
You are teaching me something right now. I had no idea that this even existed. And thank you for telling me. I will definitely have a talk with her about this.
I would be surprised if at some point in time, given the intimate relationship between Glenn Youngkin and outfits like the Family Research Council, and not to mention, you know, the Republicans in the House and Senate of Virginia, I'd be surprised if one of these chop shop bills isn't or hasn't already been introduced in there. And the thing is, Angela, most of the language of these bills solves problems that don't even exist. For instance, the language of the bill in West Virginia says that it'll be a felony for a doctor to perform gender confirmation surgery on an underage minor. Well, there are no doctors anywhere in this country doing those surgeries. And it says it'll be illegal to give them, to give a trans girl estrogen or a trans boy testosterone. Well, there's nobody doing that anywhere in this country.
It just sounds just like the critical race theory nonsense that was going on. It's the same imaginary.
Just something to whip up the hate and the bigotry of a political movement that is fueled on hate and bigotry. The thing about these proposed statutes, however, is that you get down to like A, B, C, D, and D will be, and you can't give them puberty blockers either. And this is where the problem comes in, because on the one hand, I don't know if you know, this is one of the reasons that people like your daughter deserve the decency and the kindness that they're getting. Survey after survey indicates that trans kids, something on the order of 40% of them, have admitted to at least given consideration to suicide. When I think about that, I just want to weep. I do weep.
I know, me too. That is one thing that I was really worried about it. That's why I made sure that Marion knew that I was here and that I was listening and I cared and I supported her. And I think that just makes all the difference. But yeah, all the trans kids that are suicidal or that attempt suicide and are successful just makes me, it's awful.
It's too horrible to contemplate, but it's very much a reality. And the thing is, if you had a medicine that would reduce suicide rates from 40% to 1%, in any other context, the person who came up with that medication would be given the Nobel Prize in Medicine. Well, for trans kids, that's puberty blockers, because it changes everything. And it allows kids to go forward to be comfortable in the idea that they're going to make their own decisions. I mean, we only met online yesterday. I started my transition in September 2020 at the age of 57. I waited that long. And, you know, because of that, you know, I'm 6'2", I got 50-inch shoulders, I got a size 13 foot. You know, passing is a challenge. But I am so much happier, monumentally happier. And I look at these kids and I think, my God, they've got a chance just to live their whole lives. They can transition and then they can just disappear into society as grown-ups and just be the gender that they are. And that's the goal. And so
yes, it is.
When you know when it must be an absolute joy for you to know that from having a sullen son to having a happy daughter, my God, what a you know it's like a miracle. It's like a miracle.
It really is. Yes. And congrats on your transition. I know it's such a big deal, and that's amazing that you finally got it done.
Authenticity is like the touch of a cool breeze in spring on your skin. It's unbelievably wonderful. And you kindly agreed.
So freeing, right?
Yeah. You kindly agreed to come on the program, because, and the way I first found out about you was because of this change.org petition that you have filed. And there were, I don't know what the number is now. Have you checked today how many signatories you have?
Last I checked, it was creeping up on 400 signatures. Let me pull it up and check right now.
Okay. Well, one of those signatures is mine. And
thank
I was
you so much for your support.
I was so proud to sign it. And I hope everybody within the reach of my voice, the reach of the live program, the podcast, when you give out the URL for it, I hope everybody will go and sign it, because this matters so much. You know, Glenn Youngkin says he wants to listen to parents. Parents need to speak up in order to be heard.
Yes. We are currently at 383.
Oh, we got to have a lot more than that.
Yes, we do. But it's a nice start, and it's gaining momentum. It's only been 3 days.
Okay.
That's what I keep telling myself. It's only been 3 days. But just so everyone knows, the link is change.org, save trans rights.
Change.org. Save trans rights. I suspect that if you put that into any browser, into any search bar, it should pop right up. And of course, you can also share the petition. I shared it on my Facebook page yesterday with a little little piece of commentary. It would be wonderful if people would share this far and wide, and that it would get traction. And just to be clear, something that you made clear. You don't have to be in Virginia to sign this petition.
No, you do not. You can live anywhere. And I'm not asking for money. There is a donation option, but just skip it. No need. I mean, if you want to, that's fine, but it's not required. You don't have to live in Virginia. Just sign and share. Please share. Share as much as possible. Share multiple times. We want to get as many eyes on this as possible, because it is so incredibly important for so many kids.
Oh, it absolutely is, Angela. And I cannot thank you enough for coming on here and talking about it. You have,
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. I spend a lot of time talking about these issues, particularly focused on trans kids and how important they are. And you have made that so very real during the course of this conversation. I wish you the best. And again, it's change.org, save trans teens. And just as a personal aside, please tell Marion how happy and proud and excited I am for her, and that I wish her nothing but the absolute best going forward in her transition. I think she has a beautiful life ahead of her, and there's a whole lot of people out there who are rooting for her. I just got a note from our dear friend Jeremy in Vermont, who said, "One more, I just signed. Lord knows, I know the
importance."
Thank you.
All right, yeah, everyone, change.org, and it saves trans rights.
Save trans rights. I'm sorry, I was making a mistake. Save trans rights. Okay, beautiful.
Yes,
and I hope maybe this is the beginning of a continuing conversation. If you have any questions if you have any questions about some of the things we talked about, please feel free to reach out and ask. And And I will. I'm going to try to look around and see if any of those bills have been introduced. If they have, they need to be. They need to be fought with everything that we have in us. Because, well, they're
absolutely.
It's just legislative cruelty is all it is.
And it's unnecessary. It is really unnecessary. But thank you, and I will definitely pass that along to Marion and let her know. Everything you just said, and that how everyone is supporting her. Of course, every other trans team.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, anytime you want to talk, I'm right here. Just reach out. And again, I hope we'll talk soon. And I wish you and Marion the absolute very best going forward. You're a great mom, and she's lucky to have you. And I think you're fortunate to have such a special and wonderful daughter.
Thank you. I am very fortunate. Well, thank you, Robin. You have a great night.
You too. Take care, Angela. Bye now.
Bye.
Angela Simmons, author and proponent of Save Trans Rights. It's a petition at change.org. Change.org, Save Trans Rights. Jeremy found it, lickety-split. And what a beautiful reflection it would be on this little radio family community congregation if she could see a whole bunch of new signatures in the next couple of days as the live program goes forward and the podcast goes out. Take a moment. It doesn't matter where you are on planet Earth. Take a moment and sign this. Make it clear that trans kids' lives matter. Because they do. Because they do. People say to me, you know, oh, Robin, you need to write a book. And every now and then I sit down and I start drafting some essay-type stuff. And then I kind of have to stop. Because it is not easy to write about. But I can never thank this community enough for the degree to which you have been open and accepting and kind and loving as I go through this process. I'm still getting better. It'll be a while before I'm fully healed, fully recovered. But I've never felt better in my life. And the fact that I was able to do this with your kindness and your caring and your support means so very much. You might want to, if you're feeling activist-ish, you might want to check your own state legislature, especially if you are in a maggot state. But don't take it for granted that this crap won't be introduced in so-called blue states. I remember reading over the list last year and being shocked to see these bills introduced in places I never would have dreamed. Let's see. So far, and this is not an updated list by any stretch of the imagination, bills have been introduced in Oklahoma, New Hampshire, Arizona, South Dakota, Georgia, Hawaii. Hawaii! Really? And Hawaii has the second largest trans kid population per capita in the United States. West Virginia's number one. That's why it was important for the Family Resource Council. And Tony, yes, Mother Bates. Perkins. To get this bill introduced here. Indiana, Kentucky, Missouri, South Carolina, Florida, Ohio, Utah, West Virginia. And again, that is an incomplete list. I know that folks in more enlightened states are like, oh, it could never happen here. Yes, it could. Yes, it could. I would be surprised, in fact, if these bills don't wind up being introduced in every state legislature in the country. Now, what happens to them? That's another matter
altogether. But it could happen. It absolutely can. In fact, there's a... I found this story yesterday evening coming out of Pierre, South Dakota via the Associated Press. Yesterday, the state senate of South Dakota passed a bill that Governor Christie's super spreader Noam had proposed to ban trans women and girls from participating in school sports. They can't participate as boys. And she wants to make sure that they can't participate as girls. It was broadly supported by the Republicans in the state Senate. It's off to the House for the bill now. The House also has its own version. It's just a little bit meaner. And she's even running, as I pointed out early, in an earlier program, she's even running national ads on this. Now, what's curious is that depending on how this thing is written, it may be written as stupidly as West Virginia's was. It may be directed only at trans girls, in which case it is going to be howlingly unconstitutional. At a committee hearing on the bill last week, Jennifer Phelan, who like our friend, our new friend Angela here, has a transgender daughter, she addressed the committee hearing and said, passage of this bill would directly hurt children. It would directly hurt my daughter and take away her freedom to participate in activities with her peers. And hurting, and make no mistake, that's the problem here. Hurting children is the point. It's the purpose. They mean to hurt children because this pro-family party is only pro-family insofar as the family and the families and the children are Americans. You know, from the beginning of the program, African-American voters are voting at the same rates as Americans. You know, where American means white. And every one of these things is going to engender a lawsuit. Every one of these things is going to cost these states horse-gagging wads of money. And the worst part of this is that it is being these bills are being promulgated under a fraudulent notion of fairness and equality. Republican Senator Jessica Castleberry said,
in life or sports, the playing field has rarely been even for males versus females. The boys are bigger and faster and stronger than female athletes.
And the fact of the matter, that analysis doesn't hold up, especially when little trans girls are given puberty blockers and there are then cis women, cis girls, who have higher testosterone levels than the trans girls do. And especially if the trans girls can get on puberty blockers early enough to keep things like the growth plates in the bones from taking the, you know, the broad shoulder. And muscle mass doesn't develop the same way. But of course, there are also companion bills to make sure that trans kids can't get puberty blockers. What they want to do, this is pure and simple, is erase trans children, and particularly trans girls, altogether. It's kind of like a final solution for trans girls. The stupid bills that were passed in Idaho and here in West Virginia, they've already been enjoined by a U.S. district judge. They can't go into effect because in petitioning for that injunction, the U.S. district judge had to make a finding that the plaintiffs suing to stop the law had a substantial likelihood of prevailing at trial. So that means that a dead-ass state like West Virginia, dead broke, poor as Job's turkey, brokered in the Ten Commandments, is wasting thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of dollars defending a case that had no merit to begin with. And the Republican majority in every one of these states knows it. But they don't care, because the cruelty is the point. Fiscal conservatives, right? No, well, we can't be talking about a $15 minimum wage. We certainly can't be talking about increasing food stamp benefits. No, hell no. No, we can't be doing nothing that actually benefits people who are struggling to stay alive. Oh, hell no. We got to spend our money on dumbass lawsuits against dumbass laws. Darlene, Darlene says, I just found a petition, Arkansas State Senate Protect Trans Youth. This is Protect Trans Rights. And it's at change.org. And if you go to my Facebook page and scroll down, it's pretty close to the top. In fact, let me have a quick look. And maybe I want to make sure that I really, really get the URL right. It is I'm opening it now. Let me see here. Angela has written a lovely, lovely petition. You can tell from here, from our conversation, how passionately she believes in this. Copy link. Let me just put this over into my Twitter feed real quick. Make it a little bit easier. It's up on Twitter now. Billable Rick says, I just signed a petition for transgender rights. Again, the best way to find is to scroll down my Facebook page or look on my Twitter feed. It should be easily discovered. This is going to, and again, lest anybody, you're talking too much about the transness, Robin. I'm not talking about it because I'm trans. I'm talking about it because this is the hill that the Republican Party has chosen to fight on. You know, all of this runs contrary to Sun Tzu's Art of War, because the first rule is don't get in a fight, but if it turns out that you have to get in one, then choose your own ground. Well, they've chosen the ground, and we have to fight on it. And that means we're fighting we're fighting to defend. And that makes it a little bit more difficult in a legislative, because this bill will pass. This bill will pass in the West Virginia House. And then it'll pass in the West Virginia Senate, and then I can't see him doing it, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice. Now, in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I saying that there's any that people shouldn't, children shouldn't go to the doctor. We just think trans children shouldn't go to the doctor to be all trans and stuff. and it'll become law. And then it'll cost several more tens of thousands of taxpayer dollars to defend the lawsuit against this piece of legislative trash advanced by trash legislators. And that'll, it may well be the case in Alabama. Mississippi, I'm sure, will soon follow suit. Tennessee, no doubt. Kentucky already has. Arkansas already has. Thank you, Kevin, in Colorado Springs. I just signed it as well. Let's represent, Horn. Thank you. It's really kind and it's really inspiring when I can see action like this. And I know it'll mean so much to Angela to see her numbers go up. She's trying to get to 500 signatures right now. And from 500, you try to go for 1,000. Wouldn't it be beautiful if this could get some traction? Wouldn't it be wonderful if trans kids were as important in America as American kids? Because I guess we have to hyphen, trans kids have to hyphenate too. Thank you, Haley. Haley said, I just signed Angela's petition. And so has our dear friend Tamara. Thank you. I can't imagine that it is. Is there something wrong with the head-on.live stream? Tracy says that it's playing a repeat. Has the stream gone boogered? No? No, this broadcast is live. It is the 20th day of January, 2022. Maybe refresh your player, Tracy? Well, you can't hear me. Okay. It is not a repeat. Thank you to our dear sister Jude. Oh, Tracy says the date's wrong. I don't know. I don't know. That's a lovely photograph, Jude. Thank you, Matt, in San Francisco. I signed, says Matt. I say, regarding how one treats trans people, just don't be a dick. Really, not, it, yes. I mean, it's that simple. It's an easy choice to choose not to be an asshole. I always think of the end of Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises, where Lady Brett Ashley looks at Jake Barnes in the cab. I think they're in Madrid or Barcelona. It's before the coming of the Spanish Civil War. And she says, not being a bitch is what we have instead of God. The petition's risen to 380 signatures. The Horn family is doing its thing. How strange. Darlene says, I searched just like y'all said it, and I could only find it through the Facebook page. Well, I put it out on Twitter. Okay, Tracy says the date for the broadcast is 12/24/2021. Okay, that's it. Brother Deacon Asa has an answer. The date on the head-on live player is wrong because your Stone Age encoder don't send no date information.
That's on me then. Yay. And I can't, we've been through that. There's no way for me to get it to do that. Odd. And so, by the way, the phone lines are open if you'd care to engage in some conversation radio. The stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676. And there's always the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. Ugh, Bob. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Thank you, Robert, in Australia. It's live in Oz, not a repeat. Thank you. And thank you, Jude. I hear you live. Yeah, we have now solved the problem. It's the dating convention on right. That's on me. Oh well, can't be helped. So, by the way, we entered the program with a $760 fundraising goal. We need to raise $360 of that so that we won't have a four-digit fundraising hole tomorrow. We are presently an hour and 46 minutes into another goose egg. It would be great if it wasn't. Where else to go now? yeah, our buddy Joe Vecchio says, I blame communists, anarcho-syndicalists, nihilists, Methodists. Sure. Whatever gets you through the night, Joe. Oh, this is a cool story. A Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist named Nicole Hannah Jones gave a speech for MLK Day at the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. And she later found out that that some members of the group who invited her, didn't want her to be there because of her work on the 1619 Project. And one of the excuses made was, well, you know what? I mean, she don't represent... Wrong accent. Sorry. You know what? She doesn't represent the spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. because he said you have to judge the content of a person's character, not the color of their skin. Well, that's when Ms. Hannah Jones, who knows her Dr. Martin Luther King oratory well, and she pulled together a bunch of quotes from speeches and addresses and orations he gave between 1956 and 1967, and just started reading. She didn't tell them that it came from. She didn't tell them that it came from Dr. King. She made them think that they were her own words. In other words, she punked the little racist assholes. She was described by opponents of her visit as a discredited activist and unworthy of such association with Dr. King. And then she took to Instagram and explained what she had done. This is a heck of a thread on Twitter. I was invited to give an MLK speech today, and a small number of members of the group hosting me wrote and then leaked emails opposing my giving this speech as it dishonored Dr. King for me to do so. They called me a discredited activist, unworthy of such association with King. So I scrapped my original speech and spent the entire first half of it reading excerpts from a bunch of Dr. King's speeches, but without telling anyone that I was doing so, leading the audience to think King's words were mine, and, whoo, child, it was amazing. That's how she wrote it. Here's some of it.
It was in the year 1619 that the first black slave was brought to the shores of this nation. They were brought here from the soils of Africa, and unlike the Pilgrim Fathers who landed here at Plymouth a year later, they were brought here against their will. And any time you see black in caps, it's because she subbed out Negro so that she wouldn't give away the the trick. She adds, for more than 200 years, Africa was raped and plundered, a native kingdom disorganized, the people and rulers demoralized, and throughout slavery, the black slaves were treated in a very inhuman form. White Americans must recognize that justice for black people cannot be achieved without radical changes in the structure of our society. The evils of capitalism are as real as the evils of militarism and racism. The problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. And it goes on. She says, these are the same people who now say to black people whose ancestors were brought to this country in chains and who were emancipated in 1863 without being given land to cultivate or bread to eat, that they must pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. What they truly advocate is socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor. We know full well that racism is still that hound of hell which dogs the tracks of our civilization. I mean, she laid it out. This thread goes and goes and goes. And made fools. I think what's the technical term? Played them for a fool. She said there was uncomfortable silence in the audience, and then eventually she gave the game away and said, "You've just been listening to direct quotes from Dr. Martin Luther King from over 60 years ago." She went on to point out that the man for whom we now have a federal holiday was, in his day, while he was alive, called a charlatan, a demagogue, a communist, a traitor, and that on the day of his death, three-quarters of Americans opposed his work. Good for her. Good for her. And, of course, she is, having created the 1619 Project, she is one of the most hated human beings in the country. Make no mistake, respected and revered by people who understand history, people who know the history of this country, but hated and despised, kind of like Dr. King was, by the great-grandchildren and grandchildren and children of the people who, you know, hated Dr. King. Which is why we have the phony baloney bullshit made up, dummied up, ginned up crap that is the onslaught against critical race theory. Joe Vecchio says, I blame communists is the pat answer for me these days. But, you know, it works. Don't confuse things, Jeremy. Damn it. Maybe it is a repeat. I keep hearing listeners say it's live. See what I've done here? Thank you, Billable Rick. I'm listening to your show on HeadOn.live, although about 8 minutes behind. I know it's not a repeat program because I'm not hearing the husky voice of some guy named Bob. Well, there's our first cowbell of the evening. Yes, yay. Thank you, Gary. Gary got us started. The fundraising goal is down now to 735. Thank you, Gary. Thank you so much. Hopefully you'll get some company and we'll make things, maybe we can get down to a three-digit fundraising goal for tomorrow. I think I may have found some propane. It would be great to go out and maybe buy some. I'm not going to, I know where the propane is. God, the supply. How, you know, oddly enough, And I'm going to the phones in a sec. But I was thinking about this a day or so ago, or maybe it was earlier. I don't know. It all runs together. But I can remember years ago when a member of the community who was an over-the-road truck driver talked about the concept, the logistical concept of just-in-time delivery. Because merchants like Walmart don't like to keep a big inventory, and it makes it easier to buy cheap and sell dear. That's D-E-A-R, not D-E-E-R. You can't buy deer at Walmart yet. You can buy styrofoam deer, but not... Oh, shut up. But he said, you know, one of these days, that whole thing's going to collapse. And it won't take much to make it do that. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's gone out over these series of tubes that have made it clear that we really are way the hell out in front of the cultural curve. Arnold, I don't know why you ask. Anybody get Rotella motor oil made by Shell? Tell me more, Arnold. That's beautiful, Darlene, because the prosecuting attorney of Fulton County today requested a special grand jury to aid in the investigation of Nitwit Nero's and others' potential meddling in the Georgia vote count, because she is charged with doing her duty, oath sworn, and the people she wants to talk to won't talk to her, not voluntarily, so she needed a grand jury to compel participation. And as Darlene in Connecticut points out, shortly after the news broke, Sheldon Whitehouse, a fine legal mind, senator from Rhode Island, said simply via Twitter, "It begins." Yes. I like to think that there's much unhappiness, whether he be at Mar-a-Lardass or Bed Monster. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Let's run over and see who we've got on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Robin. It's Paul from Parts Unknown.
Oh, goodness gracious, Paul. It's so good to hear from you.
Thanks. Good to be heard. Working crazy hours. By the end of the day, I'll probably have close to about 44 hours for the week so far.
Mercy.
On a pace for 50. So,
are you just over here. Are you just perpetually exhausted?
Well, I'm a parent. It goes with the territory.
Truth.
Yeah, I also wanted to comment on your just-in-time delivery that you mentioned there a little bit. We have that here at the site since it's a manufacturing plant, and they try to do just-in-time delivery of our starting materials so that they can cut down on warehouse space. And we have another name for it. It's called NFT, for never fucking there.
That sounds like it's probably much more likely to be true.
Oh, yeah, well, because, you know, it looks good on paper. The item will arrive on at the site on day two, and you can get started on day three. So we'll start the work order on day three and make it due on day seven. And day five rolls around, and the starting material is not there yet.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, and then they're like, why is this work order late? We're like, never fucking there.
God.
So... But yeah, it's just given a report. We only for the on the fabric at the lab site that is making components of COVID-19 test kits. So we're booming, and we're just cranking them out as fast as we can. But we can't let the virus get in, so we're very careful. We do mandatory weekly tests of all the staff, and we did have a huge spike over Christmas. We had 11 positives in 2 weeks, which is huge. It's like a massive spike that is roughly like 30 to 40% of all of our cases that we've had since the pandemic began are in those 2 weeks. We only had one positive test last week, but I won't know until tomorrow when the report comes out how many positives we had this week. But they've been going around talking to people and making people go home due to contact tracing. So I know that there are some positive tests floating out there. I don't know how many.
And again, to sort of reiterate, Paul, it's hard to imagine anyone being more careful than you are at your place of employment.
I would say that there's a 50% participation rate in people that are really locking it down and being careful like myself, and the other 50% are doing, I call, a B-grade job. I'd say the only places that are more secure for the against the disease than us are probably places like USIMRID or the CDC, where they really, really lock it down and they don't mess around. So we may not be major league, but we're definitely top of the minors.
Playing triple A ball. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're still getting it. And again, we haven't been getting it since before Omicron all that much. We've been being careful, but it's creeping in and it's everywhere. I mean, you listen to the news as much as I do. So, or more. I mean, hospital tests are good. People that are vaccinated and boosted are having less severe symptoms. They're going to the hospital for other reasons and getting tested at the door. And that's where a lot of the positives are coming. So it's not hurting the people as bad, but it's still overwhelming the healthcare system. And more importantly, whether you're asymptomatic or not, whether you work at a plant like mine or you're in the healthcare field, if you test positive, you go home for a week. So that's what we're experiencing now. People that are contact traced or sent home, we're down in my department. We're down 20% right now. But I mean, that's 2 people out of 10. Due to contact tracing, or people that have, if you have sick like symptoms like a sore throat or you're not feeling too well, you don't come in. Like, so, and they just called in. So we have people calling in. So it's, and then, you know, there's a lot of work to do. So you're working long hours, and I'm finishing up the second week of a 3 week, 50 hour minimum per week stretch right now.
So I don't want to get too personal, Paul, but you know, I know they pay you overtime and stuff like that, but is there anything like hazard pay? I mean, just from the dispatches you've been sending over the course of nearly 2 years now, about the virus. I mean, these schedules are consuming people. Is there any acknowledgement of that in a place like yours?
Yes, but I don't know if it has to do with the disease more that they're just making money hand over fist. Let me think. I'd say 2 or 3 times a year over the past couple of years since the pandemic, we've been getting free week of pay added to the paycheck as a little bonus. At least 2 times, but no more than 3 times a year. We got another one coming up in March, so they say. But other than that, no. But outside of the normal hazard pay that makes up our base pay, because whether there's a pandemic or not, we're working with dangerous chemicals and stuff.
I don't know how, and you can respond as you wish, of course. I don't know how you've maintained the level of equanimity that you have.
Well, if I had a more exact definition of equanimity, if you are the knower of words.
Composure, sanity.
Oh, no, I don't lose it at work, but I mean, you know, a couple of semesters ago, I sent my inner monologue out where there's just all this shit just piles on you and just like, fuck, and you're just, you just kind of go on a rant for a few minutes, just like, blah, 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 and just let it all out.
wait, what does the rant sound like again?
Blah.
God, we're sitting here laughing. We're sitting here laughing about the mental health consequences of a 2-year pandemic, and somehow we managed to find a way to smile out of it. You know, that's a win. Let me ask you something else while I do have you. You got it.
By the way, that is a tip. That is a tip I'll send to anyone. I picked up replacing curse words when I've lived a varied life and a lot of jobs. I was a daycare teacher for kindergartners after college / school, part time work. And we said that around there when we got frustrated, instead of saying, curse words in front of children who would then repeat it to their parents. So occasionally you just go, you slam your finger at a door or something like that, at a cabinet or something. It just comes out of you that, blah, 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 just random noises that don't make anything and make kids laugh rather than put them on the defensive, because you're just like, what the,
That's so good, because, I've told the story before, but I learned the hard way about children hearing parents swear when I stopped at a car lot one day, and Ferg was just little, and babies were all just little. And the salesman walked out to talk to me, and he had a broad brimmed brown fedora on. And out of the mouths of babes, total innocence. Ferg looks up and says, "Mommy," because I wasn't in the car, "Mommy, that dirty bastard has Uncle Randy's hat." Because we had a dear friend whose name was Randy, and he wore a hat just like that, and kids pick things up. And, the dirt, and I get back in the car and it's like, we got to have a talk. Because dirty bastard, well, she never uses that. She uses other things. But dirty bastard was strictly mine. And so we knew where the fault lay. But I did want to ask you about one thing, Paul, because a lot of people were deeply, deeply concerned. We need to know about Honky.
I have no further stories. Honky tends to harass me about once a month. And so a couple weeks ago was the once a month harassment, the first harassment of 2022. He's only harassed me like probably about 10 times since he's been there. So it's not an everyday thing. Otherwise, I would have done more things. The only story I can tell you about Honky that is not new, it's just something I learned talking about Honky over the Christmas break and whatnot, and having life share stories since he works out of the house. She has a few more stories, including she's got some video on her phone of actual my neighbor riding the bicycle with a goose flying behind him. She actually caught it. I need her to send that to me so I can email it to you so you can kind of just watch that. But apparently my neighbor is a retired United States postal worker. I forget the name of the person that was a United States postal worker in Georgia, or his wife is, but there's a name for it.
Ms. Karen.
Ms. Karen. I'm sure there's a name for it. I forget what it is, but he's basically a pool mechanic. His job was to basically repair the trucks and keep them maintained, all the little postal vehicles for the area. But he's just staying at home now since he's retired, and he's got a 3-year-old grandson, 2 or 3-year-old grandson that he watches while the parents go to work, daycare and COVID and all this other stuff. So it just keeps him in a secure location. And apparently the grandson and the goose get along fine. The Honky lets him pet him and all sorts of other stuff. And the 3-year-old just thinks it's awesome. His granddad's got a pet goose named Honky.
Aw, that's sweet.
Like I said in the email, his reputation in the neighborhood is better than mine. Not that I have a bad reputation; it's just more neutral. So, I fear that if it's a contest between me and Honky in the neighborhood, I'm going to lose. So I try to stay out of his way.
My only thought was stay off the roof. Moss be damned.
Well, I got to keep the house up, I got to keep the roof maintained because it's probably about 3 years overdue for being replaced.
Ew.
So, how that is living at the mansion. Yeah. No leaks yet or nothing, but.
What kind of roof is it?
I'm not a roof person, so it's a roof with shingles.
Okay.
Like
asphalt shingles? Yeah.
Yeah, like the gritty stuff, that type of thing. I wash a lot of this sandy stuff out of the gutters every year.
Yeah.
So I assume that's asphalt.
Yeah, those are asphalt shingles. You know, it's funny you mentioned the mansion. I was noting that the kitchen window is a bit of a mess, and it's kind of hard to reach from outside. And I got to thinking, you know, we need to pressure wash this. And then I realized, you know, if I started hitting this house with a pressure washer, it'd probably fall down. So, maybe
yeah.
Not.
Yeah, basically, for me, just kind of weighing in on opinions, the not happy with Supreme Court decision about OSHA can't protect folks
yep.
from the virus. And I'm just, like, I mean, I don't understand. You had the cup of coffee in law school, Robin. I don't understand how this works. This decision is taken first place and has overtaken the what I consider the stupidest scientific decision the Supreme Court ever made, which was ruling basically that a tomato is a vegetable, not a fruit, but that's okay. And that was a case pre-Civil War and the South post-Civil War during construction, the South wanted to get some economic stuff back, and the North wasn't buying tomatoes and other stuff from them from the South during the Civil War. They started buying them from Jamaica and the Caribbeans during the Civil War, and they still had trade routes and lines and deals in place. And so the South wanted to sell tomatoes again, but they were going to be more expensive because they were getting their harvests started again. And so basically they wanted to put a tariff on tomato, foreign tomatoes, to give the South an edge so they could get started again. So they originally wanted to put a tariff on, politically they couldn't put a tariff on a tomato because it'd be too obvious. So they wanted to put a tariff on fruit. And, that was massively unpopular because people like pineapples, and various other fruits, bananas that weren't grown in the United States. So that dish was not going to fly. So they said, no one likes vegetables. We're just going to make tomato a vegetable so we can pile it in there, put a tariff on it, and then the South can be happy with that. And it went up to the Supreme Court because a bunch of scientists said, that's not a vegetable, that's a fruit. And the Supreme Court basically decided that the mind of the legislator, what the legislator intended, is what is important and critical to the law, not the facts of science surrounding it. And basically the side of the scientist lawyer basically said, so what if the lawmaker's a moron and doesn't know what he's talking about when he writes law? That the Supreme Court says that's still the law. So they pass a law saying tomatoes are vegetable, therefore tomatoes are vegetable, even though it scientifically can be proven not. So that was my least favorite scientific decision the Supreme Court ever made. Now it's the second place. This is the first where where we can't handle our problems because freedom? I have a hard time believing that if there was a massive disease that was killing, there was no vaccine or anything for, that was killing 25% of the people that infected dead, that there could be a mandate.
But you know,
it feels political to me, but I'll toss it to you.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Interestingly, going back to the tomato for a moment, there's a sort of fascinating trivial off ramp to this. You know, last week Sidney Poitier died at the age of 94.
Yes.
Well, he was Bahamian, and he grew up on an island in the Bahamas called Sand Key. And guess mm-hmm. what? And guess what? His family were. Tomato farmers. They were tomato farmers. And they
probably had, also not a fan of that particular Supreme Court decision because it plunged those islands in poverty.
Well, yeah, not just that. It directly impacted his family because when that tomato embargo came on, his whole family had to pick up and move to Nassau, which did not have soil to support farming. His father was a farmer, loved farming. But it was impossible, and that was part of what propelled a young Sidney Poitier to first move from the Bahamas to Florida, where he experienced naturally the vicious racism of the time, and he kept hearing about the Harlem Renaissance, And he, with not a nickel to his name, went up to Harlem, and his acting career blossomed from there. So it had a real world impact, and of course, the other thing is tomatoes are a vegetable. Goes directly to old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan.
Ketchup is a vegetable.
Yeah, mommy, ketchup is a vegetable. You know, when they were attacking children for wanting to eat food in schools.
Yeah, that's. I lived through that as a child in school. Not a fan. Because, I mean, I did not go to a hoity-toity private prep school with decent food. And so there was a noticeable, I mean, I could tell you the year. So the third grade, so 1984 is when those changes were made, because that's when the quality of lunch dropped drastically where I was going to school.
You are correct,
like,
sir.
It just tasted bad. Like, you know, kids are really good with taste when they're young, like, you know, differentiating stuff. And it was definitely, it was the same pizza. It was the same looking food, but it definitely did not taste the same. It tasted a little worse. And that's what I remember being a kid.
I say, yeah, you're right. You're right on time. And that's, I was out of high school by then, but you're absolutely right. So as to the gravamen of your question, This is the worst kind of jurisprudential reasoning. It is ends based. A real honest appellate analysis of a lawsuit takes the case record that is before it and analyzes it and reaches a conclusion based solely upon the record before the court. Those are the rules. You can't go outside when you're in an appellate situation. You cannot go outside the four corners of the case, of the record of the trial court below. But
well, then that would what was it? Hillary Clinton, the big one that let dark money just flood in.
Citizens United.
Yeah. Citizens United, because that was unprecedented as far as I understand. Or someone asking someone to go back and broaden it, and I'm like, you can't. You're limited to the four corners of the suit or whatever the procedure. You can't go. You can't coach a lawyer as a judge to go back and try again and expand it and come back and resubmit it.
Well, the problem they can't. There's a process called remand, and the Supreme Court especially can in fact look at the case and say that the record is insufficiently developed. We are going to remand this to the trial court with instructions for further proceedings. That's okay. You can actually do that. But what happened here is, and we're going to see it again with the Mississippi right to choose case, and they are ideologues. When you get shameless ideologues into a majority on the court, they will know the outcome that they want to reach. And then they will shape the so-called reasoning of their decision to get to the desired outcome. It is dishonest. It is it lacks intellectual and jurisprudential rigor. And is, in a word, dirty pool. But it is it's what these Republican majorities are notorious for. By analogy, do you remember the Downing Street memo, Paul? You know, back during George Bush's attack on the innocent people of Iraq, the Downing Street memo.
I remember the story, but I don't remember the details of what the memo said. But it was basically equivalent of, we're already going into Iraq before we were going into Iraq.
Yeah, there's a quote from the Downing Street memo that says, and the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department will give me the exact language, I have no doubt, but the facts were being tailored to fit the situation. In other words, they knew they wanted to attack Iraq. They needed some bullshit reasons for doing it.
Yeah. I'd love to hear your opinion, Robin, on something that my very first boss in my very first real job, who was an ex-Army drill instructor, he had a lot to say about judges. He didn't like them. He liked them as a concept, but he didn't like them what they were. He said the problem with Supreme Court justices and a lot of these judges is that they do have their own ideology, and it's the equivalent of wearing a New York Giants hat as a referee in an NFL game when the New York Giants are playing. Like, it looks bad, and people just accept it. And he also had a problem with lawyers becoming judges. He felt that you couldn't truly be biased, starting as an advocate and then being objective. He felt that there was law school for lawyers, there should be judge school for judges, so that they could be trained to be objective and weigh the merits of the law and be reviewed that way, rather than starting as an advocate. How do you take someone who's job to be biased and to not see both sides, to only fight for their clients and see things from the client's point of view? How do you do that after decades, suddenly put on a black robe and be objective?
Well, it's an interesting concept, and what your old boss was reaching for was the nefarious aspects or the unfortunate aspects of a system that is deliberately adversarial. And so, consequently, an adversarial system is going to, you either win or you lose. And sometimes the facts of the case support the idea that you should do some baby splitting, or there should be some half a loafism. But an adversarial system does not admit of that. The other side of what you just raised is that it would be hard to do what your boss suggested, because so much of judicial work, the actual work of being a judge, is ruling on how a trial is conducted. If you have never tried a case, and by the way, we have members of the Supreme Court now who have never tried a case.
I'm not a lawyer, and I haven't had a cup of coffee in law school, but I would think that would be key to being a judge.
In this system, you really need to know how, because there are the arcana that surrounds how you ask questions and how you get information and how you search for the facts. You can get deep in the weeds in a real hurry. The Federal Rules of Evidence 801D, hearsay. Jesus God. I mean, you get lawyers arguing the hearsay rule, and it's like counting angels dancing on the head of a pin. And there's all these exceptions to the hearsay rule. The hearsay rule is you can't bring in hearsay. And then there's all the exceptions. And a trial court judge has to know how the rules work, and an appellate court judge has to know how to tell if the trial court judge knew how a trial works. So we've got judges sitting on the court, the Supreme Court. I have more trial experience than judges sitting on the Supreme Court. I mean, that's not a joke.
Yeah.
But the most essential problem is this ends-based decision making that, basically the Federalist Society knows what it wants, and you get there, and what they do is a case goes up to the Supreme Court on what's called a petition for certiorari, and the court then votes on whether to accept the case. And what the court will do, especially in matters of a woman's right to choose, is to look for the perfect case with the perfect litigant. For instance, there are a bunch of cases out there, you've heard me mention Judicial Watch. Liberty Counsel. Well, Liberty Counsel, run by a guy named Matt Staver, is basically a hustle. It's a grift. It's a tax-exempt. Remember, like I said the other night, Matt Staver got his client, sister clerk Kim Davis. He lawyered so good for her, he lawyered her right into the clink on contempt of court, thinking that that there was no winning from that. They suck. They get a case up to the Supreme Court once in a while, but they suck. They're clown lawyers. On the other hand,
isn't that
go?
So I was just going to ask: isn't that process as warped as these gerrymandering districts where you've got politicians choosing their voters? Shouldn't clients choose their lawyers, not the other way around?
Well, yeah, and the court should choose a case based upon its merit, and there's nine of them, and you vote one way or the other. There's no abstaining.
I'm just talking about the Liberty Council people. Lawyers looking for the perfect case.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't it be better? Shouldn't clients find lawyers, not lawyers find clients?
Absolutely. But now that we've got lawyer advertising for the last generation now, it's a different story. But the other side of the equation is there's another religious grift called the Thomas More Society. And they have some serious silk stocking lawyers. And so when a Thomas More Society case goes up to the court knows that there aren't going to be any whoopee cushions in the record. And that it's going to be deadly serious. And when the Thomas More Society comes in, there's trouble. There's going to be a new ruling for some new theocracy come out of that case. So if that helps any, but at the end of the day, it's the
no,
fact
but it does scare me.
Yeah, it should. It should. The case that I mentioned a couple of nights ago was brought by the Thomas More, I think, brought by the Thomas More Society about the stupid flagpole in Boston. I think that was Thomas More Society.
Well, I'm going to have to interrupt you here, Robin, because my break's coming to an end, and I just wanted to get some things out real quick. Get boosted if you haven't. Today is my post 2-week booster, so and I'm still testing negative, so that makes me feel better. But get boosted. Even if Omicron doesn't do anything to you or to people that you know and love, you're still everyone that gets infected still buying tickets in that mutation lottery for the jackpot to happen, and then we go through this again. And who knows what that means? It could be something less, could be something more, could be something different, like I said before in my other submissives. And I, with the overtime, I'll call in when I can because calling in is easier on my time. But writing those emails takes hours. And I just don't, with overtime and everything, I don't have the energy. But I'll get that video of Honky and send it along. But just warning the Horn community that it's going to get rough. We're here at the site experiencing drag from multiple ends, people being out, and then instruments go down. And then, of course, the company that comes out and fix the instruments are also down 10 to 15% people because those people are out and they can't go into labs and hospitals and work on the machines if they're testing positive. So then the machines go get fixed. And so we're getting stuff done less efficiently and bottlenecking more with less people. And that's not a huge deal here at the site, but I have to imagine the same thing's happening in hospitals. Because these hospitals have lawyers, everything's fine and nothing's wrong and we can handle it until we're crushed by the weight of it, until it's obvious. The dam is fine, the dam is not leaking, the dam is not going to break. Oh, the dam broke. And that will, you know, that will be a space of 24 to 48 hours when they flip that script. So they're feeling the drag, I'm pretty sure. And, you know, in the next couple of weeks, they might suddenly just be up or overwhelmed. So this is not enough to be vaccinated and boosted. Also, just be careful. You don't want to get in a car accident. You don't want to go to the hospital. You don't want to ideally do anything that's going to put more pressure on that system.
And we often don't think about that. And I know you got to go, but I have one last question. It's not for right now, but maybe when you get a chance to respond, let me know. The one thing that I keep trying to find, and I can't, is some sort of information about the efficacy of the booster and whether or not come April 1, I'm going to be getting another one. Because I'm kind of worried now because I'm in my, let's see, October, November, December, I'm in my fourth month of being boosted, and I'm wondering if I've still got effective countermeasures.
It's holding so far. I haven't seen any scientific papers, and no one's been talking at the site about like when we realized the vaccine wasn't working as well. When we take people in a hospital scenario, they ask questions like, "Are you vaccinated?" "Yes." "And you're having symptoms?" "Yes." "When was your last shot?" and then they could put out reports saying we're seeing increases in spikes in people that had their stuff done 5 or 6 months ago. So that tells us you need another shot. I haven't seen anything like that, but yeah, I've already said people are going to need another shot. Your governor, Jim Justice, has already asked for a 4-shot for some of the higher risk people, like in nursing homes and whatnot.
Yep.
A 4-shot's just coming. It's as simple as fire still blazing. Should we order more water? And pretty much, yeah.
And the answer,
I foresee that as a possibility.
And Omicron, yeah. Omicron is not the last variant. And the next letter after Omicron is pi, and we all know how long pi goes on.
3.14. Goes on forever.
Yep.
All right, Robin.
Paul, have
thanks,
a great evening.
And I'll
stay
call
safe.
When I can.
Please do.
You too.
I always enjoy
stay
it.
Stay safe out there, home committee.
You are so
stay
helpful.
Stay safe out there, home committee, and stay healthy.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care. Our buddy Paul from Parts Unknown giving up his break to help keep us informed. And he is, my God, the hours that young man's putting in. Holy mackerel. I cannot thank Paul enough. And I know we all get so very much out of it and out of his calls. And he always brings good humor and good analysis and to even grim and terrifying situations. By the way, Billable Rick awarded Paul a cowbell. For just-in-time delivery equals NFT, never fucking there. God, that's been the propane story. And other story. Sometimes for I've got a to-go, but the other thing that's paper plates, paper bowls, sturdy coffee cups with lids. Not around here, they ain't. No. And you know, we used a lot of those back when running water was a problem, because doing a big sink full of dishes took a lot of jugs of water. But those have disappeared. It's a damn weird world we live in. Oh, and perfect timing, not just in time, but perfect timing. We were talking about the anti-trans bills. And by the way, the lines are open if you want to finish the conversation or finish the program with a little conversation. Thank you to James. Thank you, James. We are now down to $730 to go. If we can raise $31, we will actually only have a $999 fundraising goal tomorrow. So if James and Gary could get a little company in the remaining remaining minutes of the program, that'd be wonderful. No, I was talking about the trans sports ban and dumbass Christy Noem. Well, the NCAA Board of Governors has met. And last night they announced a new policy on trans athletes. And, of course, particularly, you know, the great Bruga of it all is trans women in sports. Unfair advantage! Roar, roar. And never a word about a girl who goes to the state championships in high school wrestling and whips ass on all the boys. Never a word. Because that doesn't fit the narrative. University presidents, athletic directors, and college sports administrators opened their annual convention yesterday. With the beginning of winter sports championships, the rule will go into effect immediately. Georgetown University President John DeGioia, chair of the NCAA panel, said they're trying to strike the proper balance between fairness and inclusion. Oh, Jesus. There's nothing unfair about a trans girl competing. There's nothing unfair. I mean, that's just such a nebulous word. I mean, is it unfair? Let's say there's a cis female basketball player, and she's 6'3". Well, there's an inherent unfairness of her being allowed to compete against a cis female who's 5'7". I mean, it's unfair. But through training and will and drive,
maybe the 5'7" cis girl becomes an absolute bomber from the 3-point line. Trying to level the playing field. But fairness is, as I just showed, a rather nebulous term. Georgetown University President John DeGioia, I'm guessing the president of the University of Michigan wasn't there because he just recently got canned for having sexy time with another employee of the University of Michigan. Horribly embarrassing for that august institution. President DeGioia said, "We are steadfast in our support of transgender student athletes and the fostering of fairness across college sports. It is important that NCAA member schools, conferences, and college athletes compete in an inclusive, fair, safe, and respectful environment and can move forward with a clear understanding of the new policy." So what it boils down to is they punted. And they didn't even say whether a cis girl could be a punter in NCAA football. Never mind. So what they did is they said the governing body of each sport will determine the policy with regard to trans athletes on a sport-by-sport basis. And there will be ongoing review and recommendation by the NCAA Committee on Competitive Safeguards and Medical Aspects of Sports to the Board of Governors. If there's no policy in the national governing body, they will then default to the relevant international federation's policy. But if they don't have one, the NCAA will follow the International Olympic Committee for that sport. So look for some more lawsuits by the TERFs. And the funny thing is, you know, this also applies to NCAA sports in, say South Dakota. So the South Dakota legislature can try to, Idaho or West Virginia, can try to overrule the NCAA, but the NCAA has the right to simply say, okay, you don't want to do this? Well, you're out of the NCAA. And a lot of money goes away with that. Yeah. All right, let's go over to the Skype line and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Okay, hey. Hey, girl. So, now the whole thing we talk about with fairness. Now, because like you said, that word is... Because, you know, I'm thinking it may be equity or something like that. Because if you're talking about fairness, is it fair that certain voters in, I don't know, say Georgia, have to wait in line, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 hours to vote? Is that fair?
Of course not.
Okay. So if, or is it fair that, you know, certain voters in certain parts of Georgia, if they have to wait in said line for 6, 7, 5, 8, 5, 6, 9, the goose drink, Ron, not true, back on the street. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
if you can't give them water or anything like that, or something to eat, or, I don't know, give them a place, you know, portable chairs so they can sit down, is that fair?
Of course not. Okay. And during the debate yesterday, I loved how who was it? Was it James Lankford? He was talking about the fetuses.
Yes,
this is.
Isn't he the one that?
But one of them was barking and grunting and hooting about. You know what, Georgia? You can't give nobody no water because New York done did that. Well, they're liars. We know that, and so they cherry pick their facts. And a ban on giving away water at a table that says, vote for Joe Schmo is electioneering near a polling place, and it's illegal as hell, and it should be.
It should be.
There is There's a big damn difference, however, between that, which is illegal, and somebody pulling a roller cooler with bottles of water in it and handing it out to people who are on the verge of passing out from heat prostration.
Because you're not saying, you know, like you said, the thing is, they're passing the water out to everybody. They're not asking, who are you voting for before you get this water?
Right.
Because just because certain, you know, they're messing around with certain precincts or counties or what have you, or, you know, parts of certain counties, doesn't mean that just because it's like, I don't know, Fulton County, which is, you know, largely black, or wait, African American as opposed to American.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean.
Started the program with that.
I'm pretty sure you did. Doesn't mean that everybody that's voting at that place is voting for, you know, as, you know, like, since black people are a monolith, that they're voting Democrat. I'm just saying. So, you know, so it just exhausts us. It's just exhausting. It's just, you know, because I love it how they pull out fair when it suits them. When it pushes their agenda. Well, that ain't fair. Did I do it right?
Yeah.
That ain't fair. And I still revel at the way I can pull out an accent and all my
you're good.
Even though, yes, my family, you know, we're from several parts of, you know, Missouri, Arkansas, and Louisiana. I don't ever remember anybody speaking with an accent. You know, so it's like, I don't know where I get it from. I think it's you, Robin.
Probably my fault. Most things
it's your
are.
Fault.
Most things are
your fault, and I blame the communists.
Joe Vecchio will be so proud of you.
It's because of the communists. It's always the communists. Those damn liberal pinkos, commie tree hugging.
Rosicrucian, yeah. Illuminati, Bilderberger, Trilateral Commission.
You know, what is it? Impossible meat, or whatever they call it. Now eating, blah, blah, blah.
Impossible meat?
Because you ain't American if you don't eat meat. God damn it.
They call it impossible meat because it's impossible that is even remotely. No, now I'll get him. No, the impossible burger tastes good. Okay.
I did hear
that the impossible burger will induce flatulence. Those things can cause you to be jet propelled. And it ain't rainbow sparkly, no.
No. No, no. See, the thing is about that kind of stuff, it's like, you know, back in the day, I was talking to people, my Alex at one point, he was a vegan, and he did it. It wasn't like, he did it for a couple of years. As a matter of fact, and this is before Dad and I get together, in the effort, because I wanted to spend time with my baby, so I did a vegan Thanksgiving.
Dear God, what is that?
Well, actually, it wasn't bad. I did lentils.
Did you roast a tofurkey?
Hell to the no. I wasn't going that far. And now, case in point, that's what I mean, because he was saying that then vegans weren't that, and it was, most of it was full of food coloring and salt. Lots and lots of salt and sugar to make the stuff taste, you know, remotely, you know, edible. And so, doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose of being a vegan if you're buying this stuff?
Well, I mean, but that's part and parcel of, you know, trying to eat healthy.
If you buy something that's low fat, it's high salt. If you buy something that's low salt, it's high fat.
It's high fat.
Because otherwise, it just tastes like shit.
It tastes like, you know, I'll never forget. These people that I used to hang out with earlier in my foray into being, am I queer? Am I lesbian? What the hell am I? And one of the girls said, this is, you know, back when, you know, gluten-free became a thing, really. And so she was like, I don't know what gluten is, but it sure does taste good. Because, you know, gluten-free stuff, ooh. That part.
No, it wasn't awful, but I bought one of those frozen, just out of curiosity, I bought one of those frozen pizzas that was made with a cauliflower crust. I like cauliflower.
I love cauliflower. Well, back that up. I don't really love cauliflower.
But it was okay. You may recall, Annette and I took a foray while we were in Birmingham. We wanted to go to Big Bad Breakfast because I wanted some tomato gravy and red eye gravy. I was hankering bad.
Hankering.
And that was the day.
Is tomato a fruit or a vegetable there, Rob?
That's a berry. And that was the day that Siri screwed us over and sent us way down into the bougie part of Birmingham, down around Hoover and Vestavia Hills and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the wait at Big Bad Breakfast there was like, they'd be closed by the time we got in. And so we tried mm-hmm. another place and pulled around to the front of it. The big banner said, coming soon! And there was a place next to it, and it was called Zoe's Kitchen.
Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, and I went
I think you called me about that. I'm like,
yeah, and there was the dish that I got had a scoop of riced cauliflower.
Mm-mm.
And I thought, okay, well, you know, rice, you know, lunch bowl, cool, riced cauliflower. I like cauliflower. It was cold as ice and utterly unseasoned.
And was Karen in the kitchen?
Oh God, no, Zoe was, and apparently she's Karen's cousin.
Obviously she's the one that brings the potato salad.
And the chairs there were all hard wooden chairs, and I was in a fit of depression by the time we were done. I was hurting, and my heart was broken by the because I do. You know, we talk about food porn and stuff. I love flavor. I love good food, and this was such bad food, and so my taste buds were crying, my tuchus was crying, and the rest of the day was just pure depression. Because I was so looking forward to those big old homemade cathead biscuits and tomato gravy and red eye gravy, and I'm doing it to myself. I'm doing it again.
Well, in defense of rice cauliflower. I have made my own rice cauliflower, but I would never eat it cold because cauliflower cold is horrible.
It was awful. It was terrible.
You just don't do that. You don't do that now. Rice cauliflower, I throw some cauliflower in the food processor and process it until it reaches a certain consistency.
And you push it and you put it through the ricer. Yeah, I know.
Well, and, you know, I throw in, you know, saute with, you know, some little olive oil, some onion, some garlic, seasoning salt.
Yes.
And let me tell you, because I did some rice cauliflower, and then I made, little red beans and some grilled chicken and some green onion. Holy cow. I had a zero point, because this is when I was still doing Weight Watchers,
mm-hmm.
and some spinach, and I had a 0 point.
I'm going to get email about the spinach.
Now what? Okay, what's happening with the spinach?
The spinach is an abomination. Just don't. take it and put it in the same. I forget what it is. I think it was Ron and Raleigh. Take that and put it in the same place you put the and whatever it was. Oh no, one pimento cheese. But yeah.
Okay, and then some salt. I'm going to keep talking. And then some salsa verde. And like I said, I have my own chicken bowl from, you know, because you don't have, y'all don't have a Pollo Loco in your neck of the woods, yeah?
Oh, no. No, Bino.
Okay. I'm sorry. It takes my brother Solomon, that's in Atlanta. He said a few years back, they tried to open an El Pollo Loco in Atlanta. And he, you know, because he's from California. And, oh, my God, El Pollo Loco, yay, blah, blah, blah. He said, sis, I don't know who they had it at. First of all, the chicken was never done correctly. Like, there would be pink parts of the chicken.
No, 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 no.
So can I have a side? Can I get my El Pollo Loco bowl with a side of salmonella parts in it? How about that?
And by the way, Arnold in PA says, I love spinach. You don't like spinach, you should be abducted by aliens.
Right! There's something wrong with you.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. Cream spinach. Cream spinach.
Wait, what's wrong with cream spinach?
Oh, no. Ron ain't having none of the cream spinach.
But, okay, so, you know, my cream spinach, I don't know what, I mean, because when I make cream spinach, it's akin to, I don't know, I make it with, heavy whipping cream, cream cheese, and Parmesan cheese and something else, and nutmeg. So, yeah. It's more like, you know, when you go to the restaurant and you get spinach, you know, hot spinach dip and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's more so like that than anything else. But, well, you know. I'm sorry, Ron. I love you very, very much. But I'm gonna have to kind of, you know, give you side eye about going hard on about the cream spinach. Just like I know you guys give me the side eye about the mayonnaise and the raisins. And what else? What else did I say?
You are anti aubergine.
Which one was that? Was that the eggplant?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. No, it's not that I'm anti. It's just there's a certain way. If
it can be slimy.
Be prepared a certain way. Cannot. Mm-mm-mm. Like mushrooms.
Mushrooms are on the list?
It doesn't sense. No. I said just like mushrooms can't be slimy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, you know, the difference between fried okra and, say, boiled. Did you just make the yuck noise?
Yes.
I have one exception. It's okay to put okra into gumbo because it serves as a thickener.
Wait. That's it. I mean, because I make a thing, okra corn tomatoes. Because, you know, that's...
Oh, yes. Person. I buy that stuff in the can from Margaret Holmes.
You know, and, you know, depending on how much money I would have at the time, it would depend on what protein would go in it, if there was the protein. I mean, if we were, you know, usually it would be, you know, some kind of smoked sausage, you know, or chicken. But if you're really pissing in high cotton, we could throw in some shrimp.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, I've had it in New Orleans with big hunks of blue crab.
See that part?
Mm-mm-mm. By the way, Todd is in agreement. Todd says okra is the only good slimy food.
Mm-hmm.
And I love pickled okra. I'm just sit down and knock out a jar. By the way, I got a note from Matt in San Francisco with some expertise in it.
Hi, Matt.
Matt does beautiful drag. And I've actually been I got a question, Matt.
Okay.
When contouring, does it go on over the foundation or under the foundation? A girl needs to know. And I have not been able to get a satisfactory answer. But anyway, subject line, supply chain. And remember, Matt is the Horn's den mother, so you know, we go to Matt with questions like this. Supply chain, just got off a Zoom call earlier today. The company I work for has a fill rate of 60%, meaning if being completely in stock is 100%, due to supply chain issues, when ordering to fill 100% of items, only 60% of the items are being produced. In the coming weeks, price increases on all goods flavors. Minimum increase is 10% more for best-selling items. Staffing continues to be an issue as people come in and out of the workforce due to positive COVID tests and five-day quarantines. In short, it's a hot mess, but everything must continue moving forward, I guess until the wheels fall off. As a collective, we seem to be unwilling to take a hard, critical look at supply chains, invest the needed monies into building in bandwidth in order to flex up or down. Instead, we'll just keep moving forward and let the stress in the system land on the backs of the people trying to make it all work. Merca! Yeah, I mean, everything has become that line from Don't Look Up. Sit yes. back and assess.
And assess.
Sit back well, and assess.
I have a question. Now, this is for people, because I posed this question earlier with one of, and we were trying to figure that out. So today's my airport day, and I got a trip going to Hollywood. Well, Hancock Park, borderline Hollywood. Anyway, I took the street, and the trip cost, with you know, everything, $40, $45, right? And one of my buddies took a trip to Hollywood as well, but for a little further north, not that much further north, and his trip cost $90. That's because he took the freeway. Now, it's the same amount of miles, but how is it, because it's the faster way, it's more expensive? And, you know, me, you know, you and I are the same with the, you know, the ciphering and all that, but I need, you know, I know somebody out there can explain to me how taking the freeway, the same distance, because you know how much his meter turned out to be? $90.
What?
Right. And because when he told me how much his meter was, I said, you took the freeway, didn't you? Because it doesn't even cost $90 to go from the valley, from LAX to my house in the valley. But because he took the freeway, and you know, it's like, okay. And I think it has to do with the way the freeway goes or something, I don't know. So that's the question I'm posing to the king and queens of, you know, of logistics and stuff like that. Because when, you know, there's all, like I said, there's the fastest way, which is the fastest or the shortest way. And the shortest way is always cheaper than the fastest way.
I'll be damned.
So, yeah. But aside, you know, so let me go back to the food porn portion of the show. Because you already did how black women are going to save the country and maybe even the world portion when you talked about the sis in Fulton County and my girl, who lay bare the racist assholes when she did the MLK speech. But did you see the text that I sent you about that ice cream?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So, and I just found out that they actually have a store, like two or three stores in L.A. And I was pissed off because where I dropped off this afternoon was right around the corner from one of their stores. But trip this, that flavor, what is it, strawberry pretzel, what is it?
Yeah, I'm digging, I'm getting
yeah. Strawberry pretzel pie ice cream.
Jenny's strawberry pretzel pie. I've never heard of this Jenny's before, but if it's Dolly Parton's strawberry pretzel pie.
That part.
Mmm.
But here's the problem, though, because it's a limited flavor, and it's only going to be out in April, which is fine. I'll wait for it. But trip this. This flavor is only available online.
Oh, that's going to cost a small fortune.
So, so you are only limited to get ordering 2 pints. It's like $12. No, yes, it's $12 a pint. Did I say quart? No. I said pint. That part. And then on top of that, you can only get two pints of that flavor. On top of the fact, it's a 4-pint minimum to order, but you could only get...
Now we're moving into Blue Bell territory because, you know, I can't get it here. Dave and I were talking about it the other night. But I could order 4 half-gallons because that's the deal. 4 half-gallons delivered next day air. I mean, think about the carbon involved. My God. 4 half-gallons delivered next day air for $135. Joy in Ann Arbor and I have discussed this, and she's like, I want some so bad, because there ain't none in Michigan either. But both of us were like, can't justify the cost, you know, because they ship it in like a, you get your own cooler, and they pack it in dry ice, and it's just harder than Babylonian arithmetic when it gets to you.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Babylonian arithmetic. So I went online just to see. I did find a couple of really yummy flavors. There was, I'm not going to even go into it because it'll just hurt my heart. So I got the requisite 4 pints. So that was $48 with shipping. And the shipping, you know, believe it or not, wasn't bad. The shipping, it would have been, I think the shipping was $18.
Well, that's not horrible.
It's not horrible. So I still have, the cart is still full. It's still sitting there waiting for me to check out. But I have to justify spending $60-some-odd on ice cream. But then again, it is Dolly Parton.
Yeah, you wouldn't do it for many people, other than and it's $60, but it's not $135. Hey, Tracy, we run out of time, dear. You have yourself a lovely evening.
You too. But I just had to ask you about that. Two things: is it worth the $60-some-odd for 4 pints? And also about the logistics on why is it, if I'm going the same distance, but if I take the freeway, it's more money.
That just flummoxes me.
So that part. So anyway, good night.
Well, Jude wants you to know, she says, please let Tracy know she is enfolded in my meditation time morning and evening, along with many others. And Jude is for real in that.
Oh, I know this.
I mean, her meditation time is serious mindfulness. So thank you, Jude. Thank you, dear.
Thank you, Jude. Well, good night, Robin, and hopefully we'll talk tomorrow on Friday on the front porch.
I hope we do. Talk to you soon.
Oh.
Bye now.
All right, baby. Bye.
And that's Tracy. My God, well, it's only 5:03 out there. She's got some more work day ahead of her. So we wrap things up. I guess we'll be at 1,030 tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you to Gary and James for jumping in on fundraising this evening. So helpful. Thank you. I knew somebody in the international community would jump in. Robert in Australia. Pints, quarts, gallons. Please learn to speak metric. Robert, you got to understand, in the new 90 states of America, metric is communism. And probably atheism and Satanism and liberal Rosicrucian Freemasonry. Can't do that. All them little bitty kilometers. Takes a shit ton of kilometers to make up a... Oh, but I do know there's 28 grams in an ounce. I know that. Sorry.
thanks to all of you who keep the program going with your kind contributions, your gifts. Thank you to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors this evening, like Gary and James. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this ongoing conversation. It really is kind of amazing when you think about it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you so very kindly to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. By the way, Brother Deacon let me know earlier today that if you want to jump in on the horn in and take part, now it's no longer GoFundBob. If you want to jump in on the horn in, it's GoFundRobin, R-O-B-Y-N, GoFundRobin, R-O-B-Y-N.com. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. It's every bob that we sort of receding into the distance. Thank you, Brother Deacon. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Well, you're welcome, Anatole. Anatole always says thank you for the program this evening, Miss Robin. Thank you. It's very kind, Anatole. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and the only organization ever to actually see a bill introduced in Congress that would bring an end to Appalachia's agony. We're talking about the AIC Act, H.R. 2073. And if you would be so kind to please reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them, please, to co-sponsor that bill. It means the world to Appalachia. And, well, you heard Paul from Parts Unknown. However bad this is, it's going to get worse. Get your booster. Get your vaccines. Get the best mask you can. Soon you'll be able to get free masks, thanks to the Biden administration, at various drugstores around the country. Thank you so kindly for doing it, because I want this community to see this thing all the way through. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Oh, and by the way, with all the hand washing, a good hand lotion, like a Cornhuskers lotion or something like that, because, you know, soap will dry the hell out of your hands. Good to have that on hand. Carry your hand sanitizer with you. Use it when you're out and about. Don't take any chances. Keep your social distance. 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And, of course, if somebody comes towards you saying, you know what? I don't understand what they're complaining about. African Americans is voting at the same rate as Americans. Avoid that old amphibian like the plague. Because he is. Later.